This is Talk Star Wars,
the official podcast at talkstarwars.co.uk.
Welcome back to Talk Star Wars, the official podcast at talkstarwars.co.uk. I'm Mark.
I'm Stephen.
And I'm Rob.
Space Bears.
Awesomeness.
Space Bears.
When did we franchise into a team? What's going on?
We've got you now by the balls, Rob.
This
is the proper show, Steve. You can't swear.
Well, balls?
All right.
Well, I guess we're talking about genitalia, aren't we? So
you've made it worse.
You specified.
I did.
Before, front of the microphone.
Before we get started, I would just like to give a friend of ours a shout out. Paul, formerly of MovieGeeksFilmNews.com, has launched a new site called MovieScore. You can find that at movie-score.com, and it's just basically what it sounds like, everything to do with music all in one place.
Oh, okay.
So
I wasn't sure if it was going to be like rating movies.
No, it's all about music. Paul's always been a big soundtrack aficionado.
Oh, okay.
So he's,
I would get rid of that dash if I was him.
Yeah, I think finding the actual...
That's going to confuse people. Yeah. I've already put in movies, D-A-S-H score.
Oh, right. Should I have said movies hyphen score?
Yes, I think that was... Or you have to run about between the music and the score.
Play at double speed. There you go.
Yeah.
A bit like Mike Reed's run around.
A Harrison Ford wannabe in between the music and the score.
Oh, that was a good... That's a deep cut, Steve. Ooh. That's good.
Yeah,
I like that.
How'd you like that?
I like that very much. Well, anyway, we wish Paul the best of luck with his new site, his new venture. I've had a look, and it's really nice. Really nice-looking site. I think he's going to do good things over there. I sent him some Star Wars stuff already, so he's not going to be able to get rid of me. So good luck, Paul.
Good luck, Paul.
Another announcement as well this week, at the risk of sounding like a local radio station. Anthony Daniels, the original Protocol droid, turned 70.
Happy birthday.
On the 21st. What was that? Was that Monday?
No, that was Sunday.
Sunday, yeah. So happy birthday to Mr. Daniels.
Oh, my.
Oh, that was good.
Yeah.
What a silky...
I'm sure I could do better. But...
I've actually put in the show notes, happy birthday, Goldenrod.
Nice.
I don't know if I know him well enough to call him Goldenrod, though.
I think you have to know him intimately well to call him that.
I think so.
Where did he attain that moniker, Mark?
Empire.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Does Han Solo say it too?
He does, yeah.
Yeah, Soho.
On Soho.
Right, we've got a couple of bits to get to. There's some exciting stuff in news, which I didn't think there was going to be, because it looked like it was going to be a pretty slow week.
It did start off slow, didn't it?
Yeah. But is there anything you guys want to talk about before we get stuck in? What we've been up to?
Not a lot, mate. Been on my back with a bad back all week.
Blimey. Unpacking everything I own into boxes at the moment.
Yeah, because you're moving, aren't you? There's going to be a gap in everybody's podcasting schedule next week, because we won't be able to record. So what I am going to do, don't worry, your feeds will not be empty, is I'm going to reissue the Gloria Garcia interview from earlier in the year.
Okay.
And that will go out purely as the interview, with no before or after shows, just the interview. So
That'll pop
into your feeds, a little bonus in case you missed that before, or in case you don't want to listen to us, you just want your Gloria completely unmolested. As that sentence was forming, I thought, that is not the way I want to go.
You did make it weird by the end.
I did, didn't I? Okay.
I did have a dream that I was fixing the Millennium Falcon. That's kind of relevant.
Did you? That's a good one.
That's cool.
Well, I was ill, as you know, last night. I had the SH-1 Tangos. And and I actually dreamt... I was a bit, like, heated and temperature-wise. I think I had a little virus. And I dreamt that I was the one fixing the Millennium Falcon, with Han Solo shouting at me, "Not there, there! That one goes there, that one goes there." And I was like... It went on for hours as well.
Did you have your hydro spanners?
I don't know what I had, probably.
Either way.
I'm pretty well tooled up, Mark, you know.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to avoid the obvious joke that's laying there before me, and we can move on. We got a question yesterday from a Twitter follower named Ben, He goes by the Twitter handle at Century Eagle, and he sent out a question asking what we thought of the designs in The Force Awakens. He says, do you like it? Is it meh? Or is it yuck? Ship-wise, the Resistance Transporter and Kylo's shuttle are ugly. So what are your thoughts on the designs, specifically of the craft, I think, in The Force Awakens?
Isn't the Transporter a modified Y-wing, is it? Isn't that the feeling, the consensus, or B-wing?
B-wing. It's a B-wing, isn't it? Yeah, it's...
So it's kind of showing, we've spoken about this, haven't we? It's kind of showing that the Resistance is a bit run down.
Yeah.
So I think it does that well. What are your thoughts, Rob?
I don't know. I mean, to be honest, I'm struggling to picture the Resistance Transporter. So at the very best, I could say it's unremarkable.
It looks like a shipping container.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, I'm quite familiar with those this week.
When it came on screen, I was like, what?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, the shuttle, I didn't really get it. To be honest, I mean, obviously it's modelled similarly to the Lambda shuttle from Return of the Jedi, but I didn't really quite understand what the extending wings were about. So it looked all right, but I didn't really quite understand whether it was just a difference for the sake of difference, or whether it actually served some purpose.
Didn't they always fold in the wings on those?
Yeah, they folded in, but if you look at the wings, they extend as well.
Yeah, they extend up, don't they? So they become longer.
Well, that's probably for in-atmosphere stuff, like...
Yeah, I would have thought so, yeah. I mean, I just didn't really, you know, it didn't really strike me as for any reason other than because it looked kind of cool.
And that's, I think, what it is. I think that's 90% what it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
It looks interesting.
It's the size of the Emperor's shuttle. Isn't it
supposed to be... that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it is, because I was watching that really brilliant Easter egg video on YouTube that I sent you, Mark. It's fantastic. And they talk about that on there, that it is, I think, either twice or four times the size of the Emperor's shuttle.
Okay.
Because he comes down with troops in that, doesn't he? He comes down with Stormtroopers and Phasma, I think he's on it.
Well, hang on, no, because that's the Transporter comes down, they jump off, and then the shuttle comes in after they've already sort of started.
But when Kylo comes down the ramp...
Oh yeah, he has got soldiers.
He comes down. He's got two with him, I think. He's got one normal Stormtrooper and one with a red epaulette.
That sounds right. Yeah, I mean, in terms of we've lost Steve.
Yeah, so I'll bring him back.
Okay, in terms of other designs, I mean, I really liked the Stormtrooper armor. I thought that was really cool. The kind of the new.
Yeah, I really like that design. Very much.
I don't know. Again, it's not something that where it necessarily serves any different function. It just looks kind of nice.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very much sort of Stormtroopers by Apple, isn't it?
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah. It's like if they bought, you know, Beats out, I don't know.
There he comes.
Oh. Yeah. I don't know what happened then. I've moved downstairs, but I will be echoey.
If you get kicked off, I'll bring you back in, don't worry.
Oh, okay. I was panicking.
We won't leave you behind, Steve.
Yeah, Steve, we were just talking about the designs of the new Stormtroopers.
Okay, yeah.
What do you make of that?
Well,
you're a fan?
They're cool, aren't they? They're an evolution of the last ones.
Mm.
They were. It's like it makes me sort of wonder about how things evolve in Star Wars, because obviously, very futuristic times.
Yeah.
So there must be a point where things stop evolving, and 30 years isn't that big a time, is it? So it wouldn't. I was surprised to see new Stormtroopers. So I would have assumed that they would have had the same outfits that were mass-produced before.
Yeah.
That makes sense, actually. I never really thought about that.
Yeah, there's a bit in the show notes, I think, or is there? Let me just have a quick look through. Or did I drop that out because I thought it might have been a bit boring?
And yet, here we are.
It doesn't exist in Star Wars, does it? There's no such thing as fashion. So,
no, there's not.
It's never been covered on screen, at the very least.
No.
What I had in the show notes, which I have taken out because more interesting things had popped up, was the Stormtrooper designs that are coming into Rogue One. There's a bevy of variations.
Ooh.
So I think what we're seeing with the evolution of the white Stormtroopers, the regular normal Stormtroopers,
mm-hmm.
might be kind of an iterative upgrade because. Some of the special forces troopers, if you like, there's one called a Scarab Trooper, I think, in the new...
Okay.
I'm just going to see if I can call something up on... I think makingstarwars.com had something about it. Let's go there. Yeah, there's like a Scarab trooper. There's a new Sand trooper. There's a Death Squad trooper, which is black with like green lights on the helmet and things like that.
Oh, wow.
Absolutely, they sound fantastic.
And this is in the Rogue One.
This is in Rogue One,
wow. Which is back. So that's back when we, you know, with the old style.
Yeah,
yeah.
But it's kind of like, I think what I'm taking away from it is that we've got. I can't find this thing. Never mind. I think what we're seeing it with this change, this slight stylistic change in the Stormtroopers in A Force Awakens was perhaps a desire to meet a functional need. Like, you have these specially designed Stormtrooper armors for specific functions, like TIE fighter pilots are always different,
yeah.
The AT-AT drivers are always different. Now we've got these special forces things like the scout bike guy in Return of the Jedi is very different.
Yeah.
So perhaps this iterative change to the, is that the right word? I'm not even sure. I've had two glasses of red wine. this is all done to meet to serve a purpose and meet a specific need, and we're just seeing it as a change for the sake of change. But they do it fantastic, though.
I say, the new Stormtrooper stuff, I'm a big fan of. Coming back to sort of circling back to his original question, most of the stuff I know that I found about the new ships was I didn't really get some of the changes. I mean, one thing I will say is I really liked the Special Forces TIE fighters with the gunners in the back. They were really cool.
They look great. Because we were trying to work out when this was all, as the film moved into post-production, we were starting to see more and more of these designs, more and more of these things make out.
Yeah.
There was a lot of shots of that Special Forces TIE fighter with the red pod on the side.
Yeah.
I suspect that's something to do with that reverse gunner.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a thing about, I had this theory, a code red theory, about how everything that was red in the film would have been stolen. Reappropriated, and it kind of works really with with the TIE fighter that got nicked, and then the red patch on Poe's jacket that ended up going to Finn, C-3PO's arm.
Mm-hmm.
So there's plenty in there about to support that theory.
About 3PO's arm, do we? Because he says, doesn't he? I'll tell you later or something, doesn't he?
Yeah, he says I must get my original arm reattached. So he's obviously got it to hand, so to speak.
And I'm pretty sure there is a red protocol droid in the closing moments of Force Awakens as well.
So I wonder if that's going to be covered in Rogue One.
It's definitely going to be covered in a comic book, which is, I think it's due in April. It's been pushed back a couple of times. But on the subject of comic books, I think before I do move on, should we just we'll put Ben's question to bed?
Yeah.
I really like the designs in The Force Awakens. I can see what he means about how they are slightly... These two examples he's given, Kylo Shuttles and the Resistance Transporter, yes, they are a little bit unattractive, but then the Falcon is supposed to be unattractive, even though it is a gorgeous thing. But overall, I really do quite like them. And I like the wardrobe designs and all that sort of thing. I think all the choices that were made were good ones.
Yeah, I'm kind of a mix. Like, I'm a mix of likes and mess. There's nothing really that really... turns me off completely. There's nothing that I think, oh, that's hideous, but there's a mix to me of kind of, yeah, that's really cool, and that's fine. It can just, that's fine.
I would go with the transporters being the worst looking, and trouble is that transporter, unless you know the backstory and the fact that it's a modified B-wing, or we think you can't, it's kind of lost on the audience, and they just think, well, that's an awful looking ship.
Oh, sorry. Are we talking about the one that lands on Maz Kanata's?
Yeah, that Leia comes in on.
Sorry, yes, I do know what you mean now. Yeah,
were you thinking of the thing that the Stormtroopers come in on?
No, I couldn't picture it when we said Resistance Transporter. I thought, well, I did see one, but I couldn't think where it was. I know what you mean now. The whole Resistance aesthetic did seem to me to be very kind of World War II France in its, you know, the way they were dressed and stuff. I wonder if that's a deliberate choice to make it. Obviously, it's a resistance.
Yeah, they're playing on that note, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I'd say overall, kind of a mix of likes and mez. Mez?
Yeah, that's
yeah, more than one meh. That's fine.
Couple of mez.
What about you, Steve?
Yeah, that's my only one I did think, oh, that doesn't look very good. But yeah, overall, I think they're like mez. the temple in that was awesome.
Yeah.
Yes.
The design of that, very, and the fact they got loads of Easter eggs in there, and it was supposed to be very cantina-esque, wasn't it, inside?
Yes.
Which worked.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you can't fault, apart from that transporter, the film was faultless, wasn't it, as far as
designs and stuff.
Costume design and all the rest of it.
Yeah, and the creature design as well was really good. There was a couple of things in that, in Maz's castle, I really like. There's if you've got the visual dictionary, they are actually in there. I think they're triplets. There's like a werewolf looking alien.
Well, George Lucas wanted to take him out. He did take him out, didn't he?
He took the werewolf out of the cantina.
And that's
why three of them in Maz's place. Brilliant.
Yeah, that's why he put him in, JJ, because
I'll show him
nod to the werewolf.
Yeah. I really like that character. I like the look of it. And the other thing I really liked, I loved the X-Wings. I thought they were really cool.
Oh, yeah. They were brilliant, yeah.
But the fighter pilot helmet, or the X-Wing pilot helmets, I really like the redesigns on those.
Yeah.
I thought they looked really cool.
Here's a fun bit of trivia for you. So, you know the orange jackets they wear?
Yeah.
They've actually got the words "pull to inflate" written on them in Arabesh.
Yes, I saw that. That's cool, isn't it?
I thought that was just a nice little touch, you know, just to have kind of, you know, stuff in there that would exist in our world.
Yeah.
Did you notice how, the talking about ship design, the main big ship that passes up with the scrolling credits, did you notice how the front of that, as it passes across the planet, looks like the shape of Kylo Ren's sword?
Oh, really? I did not notice that.
It's got like a hilt across the front, hasn't it?
Oh, right.
Oh, that's the other bit of redesign that we should mention as well, actually, the lightsaber.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because that, I mean, that got people going. Well, that was a stroke of genius to drop that shot in that first 100%. Trailer, because that got tongues wagging, didn't it?
Yeah. Well, isn't that made with a different crystal? Isn't it made with
It's cracked.
It's cracked, yes.
Yeah, so you need the
vents.
Exhaust ports.
Yeah. And yeah, the fact that even though that trailer, that shot itself didn't end up in the final film, it was still obviously well worth doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hmm.
Maybe we'll see on the Blu-ray what's going to happen there.
Well, it's a different angle, isn't it, in the final film. They're running through the woods, and then you hear the lightsaber kick off, and then when they look, they sort of, it pans across and he stood in front of them.
Yeah, the sound design, there's a little bit of chainsaw in there as well.
Is there really?
In the background, and his lightsaber hum. There's a little chainsaw going off. Makes it sound really aggressive.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Right, I was going to just quickly mention comic books. After we've been talking about the C-3PO thing and the reveal of the red arm is coming in a comic book at some point.
Thanks for the question, Ben, by the way.
Yes, thank you, Ben. That's much appreciated. I just stepped off of Obi-Wan and Anakin.
Oh, yeah, I've read the first issue. That seemed pretty good.
It just doesn't do anything. I think it's going to be really ponderous.
Darn.
And navel-gazing.
That's a shame. I'd like to say, I got the first issue. I went through a fits and starts in sort of November, December last year. I had a big Comixology backlog.
Yeah.
And I was determined to clear it out. And I read 206 individual issues throughout November and December, trying to clear it out. And one of the ones I read was Obi-Wan and Anakin, and I liked the first issue.
With the bit with the robot with the hologram around it, looked like Darth Maul and things like that.
Mm.
Yeah, there was a lot of that, but I felt that it was playing too much on notes that we'd already
heard. Right, I see.
And I think there's so much to do with those two characters. There's so much story to be told.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I've already had two issues, and it's only like a 6-issue run, I think.
Yeah.
And they've done nothing with it, so I've just jumped off because it's...
Fair enough. Yeah, a lot of these are 6 issues only because they end up in trade paperbacks.
Yeah. And the new Star Wars, as we've seen with The Force Awakens, it's breakneck speed.
Mm.
Yeah.
There's no issues with pacing, and this book just didn't have it, so...
Yeah, fair enough. I've just picked up the first trade paperback of Darth Vader, so I'm looking forward to reading that at some point.
Oh, right, and what's that? Is that 12 episodes? 12 issues, rather?
The one I bought was the first 6. I think it's been going for a bit longer than that. I'm not sure if it's an ongoing series, but it's definitely had two trades, so it must be up to at least 12 issues.
So does that get you to Vader Down? Because there's a story in it called Vader Down.
I think it does, yeah, I think that's right. But I've packed it, so obviously I have to wait for a bit.
Yeah, that's a shame.
I know. This is such is my life at the moment. Everything I have to hand is what I've chosen not to put in boxes.
Yeah, which is your podcasting equipment.
Pretty much.
And food.
Put the missus in a box, keep your Star Wars stuff out.
She'd never forgive me. I don't live with her yet.
That's like she doesn't listen to this episode, Steve.
Mark messaged me and made me say that.
No, that's not... Oh, scandalous. Okay, what was the other point I wanted to make? Oh, yeah, Audible. Rob, you got me onto something now, because I got Audible just to hear The Force Awakens.
Good.
But, yeah. And straight off the back of that, I've started Heir to the Jedi.
Oh, okay.
Have you read that yet?
I have. It's... For me, it was a bit of a mixed bag. There were bits of it that I liked so much, I wish they'd... It's hard to explain. It's a mix of loads of short bits.
Right.
It's all about Luke, but there's a central theme, but there's loads of little side things that he does on the way. And there are some bits that I thought were so good, I wish they were their own book. And then there are some that I thought were just kind of unremarkable. But overall, I thought it was pretty good.
Well, I've got to say, I started it... I probably started it at the wrong time, to be honest. I had something else going on.
Oh, okay. Halfway through or something.
No, no, no. I started it from the beginning. But right. I was in the middle of a hellish week and I didn't really have the time to dedicate to it, but I tried to squeeze it in.
Yep.
And I got into it, and the first thing that struck me, and Steve, this will probably rub you up the wrong way as well, was first person perspective.
Ooh.
So it was Luke talking about himself.
I don't think that lasts.
Does it not?
I don't think so. I seem to recall that it's done from a third person at some point. I may be wrong. I may be confusing it with a different book, to be honest.
I found it so distracting. At first, it was so distracting.
Right. Is it trying to make you feel you're like the character? Or
yeah,
when they do that in films, like they did it in Doom, and it was awful. Now they're making an entire theme film.
Oh, I've seen that trailer. It looks ridiculous.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if that's my bag, to be fair.
No, I'll probably give it a go. I don't think it's going to be a cinema run. It strikes me as the kind of thing that will be straight to Netflix.
Yeah. Well, this, I've got to say, it's very strange to hear somebody talking as though they're Luke in a book and not get... Because obviously they're limited because they can't get outside of his experience and tell you what's going on elsewhere. So the narrative is pretty much trapped in one place.
That doesn't endure throughout the whole thing. That strikes me as there's a part of it that kind of switches between him and first person and third person.
Right.
And I'm pretty sure if it's the book I'm thinking of, with that caveat, if it's the book I'm thinking of, it doesn't stay in first person. It switches between the two depending on what the story's doing.
Well, I'll give you a hint what book it is, and at the risk of dropping a spoiler.
It's been out for a while.
It has been out for a while. And I meant to ask Pablo Hidalgo if it was canon. I'm not sure if it's...
Okay.
Canon.
Oh, Heir to the Jedi?
Yeah.
I'm fairly sure it's canon.
It's new canon, is it? Let's see.
I believe so.
What I did really like about it was it tells you where Luke gets the green crystal.
Yes.
For his lightsaber in Jedi.
Yes. Yes, it does.
And I... Because that was on my second session listening to it.
Mm-hmm.
I was walking the dog and I put it on. I thought, I've got probably best part of an hour, so I listened to it. And I just fell in love with it. And that Luke first-person thing soon faded into the background. I got used to it.
Yep.
And then he's recounting this story. And then I thought, another lightsaber. And it's got a green blade. Oh, God, this is where it's going to come from.
You're talking about... Sorry, I thought you meant... I thought you were still talking about comics. You're talking about an audiobook, aren't you?
No, this is an audiobook,
it's an audiobook of a novel,
Oh, okay. So it's not actually... I was thinking visually first person. That's why I was...
Oh, okay.
Sorry, I've caught up now.
I see.
I'm normally 10 minutes behind, Rob. Sorry, Rob. Carry on, Mark.
That was pretty much it. It's just what I thought was going to be a disastrous thing, and Audible do an exchange program, don't they? They'll exchange any book for you if you don't like it.
If you just can't get on with it, they'll exchange it. They're pretty good about that sort of thing, as long as you haven't been through the whole thing and then go, nah.
Yeah, well, I thought it was pretty good. I'd considered it, and then I thought, well, it's pretty clear that I haven't listened to it because I've barely listened to it. And then I thought, well, I barely listened to it. I better give it a go.
they can track that stuff, so they do know. They can tell when you've only got a part way into it or whatever. So which ones have you listened to? Which ones have you listened to and read now?
Only the two, actually.
Okay.
The Force Awakens, the Alan Dean Foster Force Awakens novelization, yep, which I thought was blinding, and this yep one, which I'm really starting to get into.
It's the same narrator, isn't it? It's Mark Thompson.
Yeah, he's great.
He's incredible. And actually, I retweeted something today, which was an article from StarWars.com about the behind the scenes on the audiobooks.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And it's an interview with Mark Thompson and a guy called Jonathan Davis, who does the pretty much their relatively split about half and half. One, Mark Thompson does about half of them and Jonathan Davis does the other half. He tends to do the Old Republic stuff from the Legends, and he tends to do anything themed on the dark side because he's got a really good gravelly voice.
Yeah.
But if you get a chance to listen to him, the Darth Bane trilogy are very good.
Okay. Are they canon? Because I'm
not,
a bit weird about that.
Darth Bane himself is canon because he's in Clone Wars. But,
I can see your tweet. I'm just tweeting that out now on the Talk yeah Star Wars account.
The character of Darth Bane is canon because he appears in Clone Wars as a holocron or as a Force ghost or something. I forget. But the stories themselves are not official canon anymore.
Right.
But a friend of mine summed it up as, if you accept that Darth Bane's canon, which he is, then you can kind of imagine these stories as having happened, but they could even be legends within the Star Wars universe themselves.
Oh,
they're done
right
in that kind of way. And they're just superb.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, even though the Legends canon is not proper canon, I still love some of those stories.
Steve, do you go in for any of these things?
Well, you know, I've never really done any audio. I listened to Heir to the Empire, read that book, and then I listened to that on audio. Timothy Zahn. Other than that, I've never really been a big fan of the comics or the or the audio books, to be honest. And that's probably one I'm quite weak on the lore, as it were.
Heir to the Empire is one of my favourites in the entire Legends canon because I love the character of Grand Admiral Thrawn so much.
Coming to Star Wars Rebels.
A long time they were going to do.
Are you serious?
Yeah, he's coming to Star Wars Rebels.
Oh, amazing.
What's that part?
Thrawn. Grand Admiral Thrawn.
Yes, the baddie. Yes, I remember that name now you mention it.
Wonderful.
Yeah,
okay,
he's coming to Star Wars Rebels.
This has made my day. Absolutely made my day. He is an amazing character.
So you need to jump onto that show then. Have you watched it at all, Rob?
No, and actually I originally submitted a listener question before I joined the cast about Rebels. Now, I'll qualify this by saying that I haven't watched it, and I do at some point plan to catch up.
Yeah.
But it does seem to me like every time they put a new trailer up for Rebels, Order 66 seems less and less effective. Because obviously you start the series off with, was it Kanan?
Kanan.
Freddie Prinze Jr.
Yeah.
And Ezra, obviously, as a sort of apprentice.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw the season 2 mid-season trailer. Ahsoka Tano's still alive.
Yeah.
There's the Inquisitor, who's, I'm presuming, a dark side user.
Yeah, well, I'll go into that in a second.
Okay, and then you've got this kind of group of people with yellow lightsabers who've all got masks on,
mm-hmm,
and it just seems like there's loads of Force users around, and it doesn't really feel like the Order 66 was particularly good, because all it seemed to do was kill a few people in a kind of power montage.
Yeah, well, so far we've had Ahsoka left the Order, didn't she? So no one really knows where she went after... during the Clone Wars. So she was obviously missed during Order 66.
Right.
There's a great callback. My favourite thing from Rebel so far is a line from Darth Vader it must be a vision Ahsoka's having where he says, "The apprentice lives."
Okay.
Or, hang on, have I got that right? He definitely says the apprentice lives, but there is a fantastic scene where she's having a vision.
Yeah.
And he talks to her in a vision, and it's Anakin talking.
Oh, yeah, I saw the...
and I think it's Matt Lanter that does the voice as well.
That sounds right. I think he's in... I think part of it's in one of the trailers.
Yeah, it is. And it's wonderful because he says, can you see what's... It's something... I'm paraphrasing, but can you see what's happened to me? Can you see what I've become?
Yeah.
So he kind of hints at the fact that Anakin's inside, and I find that really, really tragic that he's trapped inside this monster of his own making. That's powerful storytelling. But then they do sort it up really by skewing so young with a show, and I just think there's so much more to be done with it.
Yeah,
it puts me off a little bit. But the
But they have to go young, Mark, don't they? Because
well, that's it. That's the format as well.
Aren't going to watch it. Not, you know, that's a generalisation, but
yeah, but I think it's a fair generalisation. It really it's aimed at the Star Wars older Star Wars fans with kids who want to sit down and enjoy something together that they can
with their kids,
consume every week.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, I tried to watch one yesterday. I was doing something. I was writing, I think, for the site, and it was on in the background. This space whale thing. It's
right.
It just doesn't do anything to me. But I like the. You mentioned the Inquisitor, Rob.
Yes.
I must just address this.
He's a really cool character.
There's a great but I don't want to give any spoilers because if you're going to start it, I'll try and do this as spoiler-free as possible.
All right.
But it's a little bit like the Emperor's kind of learnt his lesson by employing a Sith apprentices. This is all implied. It's not explicit in the show.
Okay.
So what he's done is he's gathered around him a bunch of Force sensitives and given them just enough to become sort of minions, if you like. So they go out, they got some Force ability, they got lightsabers, but they're not Sith. They're not powerful enough to be Sith.
Okay.
And, the Inquisitor, and there's a couple more in Season 2.
Yeah.
They go out and they do the Empire's bidding as agents.
Yeah.
Like lightsaber-wielding agents. But if they went up against Vader, they'd be buggered, basically. They're not your Darths. They're not that caliber. Which I think is a really interesting prospect.
Yeah, that's a nice dynamic. It does sound interesting.
Kind of shades of the Knights of Ren, really.
Yeah, yeah. Which is obviously, you know, again, this is the other thing as well, is whenever I see a Rebels trailer, I think, well, come on, that's just there because, you know, episode 7. I mean, he finds a crossguard lightsaber, and I think, come on.
Yeah.
You know, and
I'm not sure where that's going because I haven't seen that far. We're not that far along yet in the UK.
I saw somebody jump to the theory that Ezra might be Snoke, but I thought that was a bit of a leap.
Yeah, I've heard that a couple of times. Did you get that? Did you hear that on Jedi Council?
I think it just popped up on my Twitter, so maybe they got it from there.
Yeah, I'm not digging that at all.
I'm not sold on that. It strikes me as odd that because obviously Rebels is only a few years old, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so the kids who are growing up with it now wouldn't even be able to see episode 7 necessarily without an adult.
No.
So by the time 9 comes out, they'd barely be old enough to really take in what they're seeing.
And there's also a flow of information where information will flow down into Rebels from the movies.
Yeah.
But it won't Rebels, the TV shows, they will not inform the movies.
Yeah,
they're not going to set something up in the TV shows that will then affect a storyteller's ability on the big screen.
Yeah, I think you're right there. I think it would be very unusual. Whereas, obviously, you know, you can say, oh, well, you thought it was cool in the movies. Now you can see it in the TV show.
Yeah.
It strikes me as weird they'd have story stuff, you know, here's episode 9. We hope you've been paying attention to the Disney XD kids show.
Yeah, you don't want
that.
Because
it's really important. Yeah.
Steve, you've not watched Rebels, have you?
Yeah, I watched one episode, and I know if I'd have given it a go, I would have probably found it more interesting. But I knew straight off the bat it wasn't for me.
Mm. Yeah, now I think about it, I have seen the Spark of Rebellion, the sort of pilot thing they did. I've seen that.
Did you see the extended cut with Vader in it?
No, I think I just saw the standard cut.
Right, because there was a scene where he was in it, and he was commanding the Inquisitor to do some stuff.
Oh, hang on, that does sound familiar. Was he was he like a hologram?
He was, yeah.
Oh, okay, maybe I have
so
seen
So you
it
did then. See the long one, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not even that it was a cartoon, really, that turned me off. It was more the style.
And oh, okay.
It was aimed quite clearly towards more young people, and that it just put me off right from the start, you know?
Yeah. It just strikes me as odd that, you know, Yoda's back in and you can find him really easily and that sort of thing. And, you know, Maul's about and all that stuff. And I know Maul's obviously been brought back in Clone Wars, so he's canon alive again. But it all seems a bit overly tidy to me at times.
Yeah, I don't know what...
Too convenient.
Exactly.
I heard somebody say the other day, so I can't pass this off as my own insight, but
that's fine.
Somebody was commenting on the way Dave Filoni, showrunner for Rebels, he's populating it with Clone Wars characters.
Yeah.
And it makes me wonder how much of that is done. They were suggesting that it was done because he controls those characters, so he's free to do what he wants with them. But I wonder how much of it is done to sort of try and pull a Clone Wars audience in. So this is, it's gone from being Star Wars Rebels to being a sequel to the Clone Wars, because you got a few of the clone troopers in there now. And so, you know,
I'm not sure how much I like that approach. I think you're about to say it needs to stand on its own two feet.
It really does.
Yeah, because it's really obviously does. If it's going to run for a few years, which I get the impression it is.
I think so.
It doesn't seem to be able to pick which time period it's set in, because obviously I'm guessing it's right before Episode 4, right?
Yeah, because
obviously it's got 18-year-old Leia in it.
The young lad Ezra is supposed to be the same age. Well, I think he's a couple of days older than the twins.
Really?
Because he was born on something called Empire Day, and then I think Luke and Leia were born a couple of days after.
Oh wow! So that's really weird, because I got the impression from the mid-season trailer that he was still quite young, whereas they're showing off 18-year-old Leia.
Yeah.
You know, so that's a bit odd.
Yeah, it doesn't
seems
really,
like it's moved around. Doesn't make a lot of sense.
It doesn't really click together.
No.
100%, but there you go.
Yeah. Well.
Anyway, we've got another birthday announcement, because Carrie Fisher has just tweeted out that it's Gary's birthday today. He's 28 years young. Dog years. Happy birthday.
Oh.
He's four. Happy birthday, Gary Fisher.
Happy birthday, Gary.
Which brings us to our first point on the show notes, and we've been recording for half an hour.
Awesome.
Gary Fisher, birthday boy Gary Fisher, made such a good segue, a huge announcement earlier on this week when he revealed the production title for Star Wars Episode 8 as being Space Bear. Did you see the picture?
Yes. It's him in the little chair, isn't it?
It's brilliant. Steve, did you see it?
No, send it. I'll put it on the message, Mark. I'll have a look.
Oh, I'll see if I can find it. Yeah.
He's a weird looking dog, but I can't help but I find him endearing.
Oh, he's awesome. He's got an oversized tongue, hasn't he?
Yes. Like I say, he's very odd looking, but at the same time, he's very endearing.
Steve. I'll just try and find that picture and stick it in the thing for Steve.
Sure.
Yeah, so if
it's
you...
A bit of name as any, isn't it?
If you were listening to... last week's episode, which I think is episode 14, you'd have heard me mention Space Bear when we were talking about Foodles being sued.
I noticed that when I listened back to it.
Yeah, I'd mentioned Space Bear because that is, I believe, the name of the production company that was set up to produce.
Oh, to get away with all the suing thing.
Yeah. To shield the parent company. But yeah, what you're saying is right.
Makes you wonder who they're planning on taking out this time.
Yeah. Everyone needs to watch. Mark Hamill needs to watch in case they really want to pull off that lost hand.
He's always been a method actor.
He's very method, yeah. Well, that's not going to work. I'm sending you a link.
Okay.
I mentioned in the show last week that the production title for that the production company for episode 8 was Space Bear, and now it looks like that's the working title, Space Bear.
Yeah, like I say, I was listening back to it yesterday and I picked up on that and I went, oh, that must be where it came from.
Yeah, weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's I didn't expect it to, in all honesty, I didn't expect it to be the working title. I thought there was going to be something else, something a bit cooler, but it was a bit of a surprise. Space Bear. So an obvious nod to the Ewoks, would you say?
Could be, yeah.
I would imagine that's probably the...
I think that's reasonable.
The idea.
Yeah. I mean, do you think... I mean, it sounds like a weird question, a bit of a conspiracy tinfoil hat style question, but do you think there's anything to that name?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't.
No, I agree. I just was curious to know your thoughts.
Yeah, no, after the sort of, what else have we had?
What was the working title for episode 7?
Do you know what? I'm not
Luke's
sure.
Luke's Big Bad Adventure.
Mark Hamill's beard?
Yeah, maybe. Because we've had Blue Harvest.
Blue Harvest was Return of the Jedi. And that's the interesting thing about where these names come from, because the idea was that you would mask what you're doing with these production names so that you wouldn't be overcharged.
Yeah.
So
oh, I see.
And dies at the end, I think they called it.
No, I don't know if that was the thing. I don't know if there's any truth in that. Yeah, but the idea was that with Blue Harvest, they knew that if they said it was a Star Wars film, something that cost a dollar would suddenly cost $7.
Yeah, sure.
So it's a tactic.
Yeah, so it makes sense, you know. I'm sure if we were to go and, you know, try and book a room or something, and then get to we talk Star Wars. Obviously, you know, we are a big deal.
One step at a time.
Yeah, we are an understandably big deal. So they do have to, we would suddenly start getting gouged.
An understandably big deal.
Yeah, absolutely.
In fact, we were reached out to yesterday because we are such a big deal.
Oh.
By a gentleman who claims to have an early release, he's got his hands on a copy of The Force Awakens Blu-ray, the official release.
Yeah,
Blu-ray.
Did you see that? I did, and I was intrigued. And what I really liked was the fact that you asked a couple of good questions that would very obviously kind of, you know, if he was making it up for a bit of attention, we'd have known from the answers he gave. But actually, from his answers, I think he's probably telling the truth.
Yeah. Wow. Just to let you know, I've just had a message from Pablo Hidalgo, and yeah, Heir to the Jedi is canon.
Cool. That confirms it then. Like I said, I thought it was, but I wasn't 100% sure.
Yeah, that's good. So I know everything I'm picking up now is true.
Yeah.
Sorry, Rob. So yeah, we were saying this gent. I don't want to name this guy.
That's fine. Just in case he gets. We don't want to get him in trouble, obviously.
No, I don't want to get him in trouble. It's not like, you know, it's on Twitter. It's pretty public. So if anyone wants to,
if you feel so inclined, you can find it.
But the problem is, I think if he has got a copy of it, then, you know, I don't know how he's got a copy of it. For all I know, he might work for whoever.
Could be. Or an affiliated company.
And it could be, you know, I don't want to cause anybody any embarrassment.
Exactly.
Or
go around and watch it.
Yeah. Well, I did. Rob's just alluded to the fact that I asked him a couple of questions, Steve, just to see what I could learn from it. And one of them, I asked him what the artwork was like, how many discs there were, what he could tell us about the extras.
Yeah, he said you'd like the artwork, and it makes me wonder, because obviously the podcast artwork is the Stormtroopers from episode 7. And I wonder if maybe there's a, you know, maybe he was alluding to something like that.
Yeah, that could be.
I've been proper detective this week. It's a conversation best saved for the after show. I've been a busy little detective this week for reasons I can explain elsewhere.
Okay,
very unusual.
Oh, we'll get into that later.
Yeah, by all means.
Well, he's told us a couple of bits about the special features. He said a lot you could probably guess. There's a nice bit on the set realisation of the Lugger Beast and BBH True Gender and a few Maz Kanata deleted scenes, which I think are quite interesting.
I think we've discussed that we thought there were a couple anyway, so that's interesting to have that confirmed.
Yeah, he's
potentially
in his tweet he's put scenes. I suspect he means deleted scenes. Casting decisions, Daniel Craig and Simon Pegg, that's a feature. That should be quite interesting.
I wonder if they'll do. Have you ever watched the Frasier DVDs? Are you fans of Frasier, either of you?
I'm a huge fan of Frasier, but I've never watched the DVD. I watch it on Amazon Prime.
Oh, okay. So on the DVDs, they've got a little featurette at the end of every series that tells you which celebrities phoned in, because obviously it has celebrities phoned into the radio station as characters. And it will play the clip with the voice alongside it. So you go, oh, it's Kevin Bacon or whatever.
Right, yeah. Because I wonder, have the black and white headshots at the end, don't they? The people that have.
They do, yeah. At the end of the series, they do it in the credits at the end of the series. But on the discs, they do it. I think it's every disc they have a short one, or they do it at the end of the series. They do a sort of a little featurette where it's actually the clip from the show with the celebrity name underneath it, so you know who it is. I wonder if
Daniel Craig and Kevin Smith thing is that. So it's showing you where in the film you'd see them.
Yeah.
Maybe. Again, obviously, it's all speculation because we're taking him at his word.
Yeah, and I've no reason to doubt him. I mean, I would think it would be unusual for somebody to tell a little white lie like that for no reason.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm more of a Seinfeld man. Well,
I've heard nothing but good things, but regrettably, I've never been able to catch up.
Oh my God, you've got to watch Seinfeld. You do nothing else for the rest of your life. Watch Seinfeld.
Well, there's a good chance I'll do nothing else for the rest of my life. But
I saw a really good piece of Seinfeld Star Wars mashup art today.
Okay.
It was Seinfeld as Luke with these judo shirt open and the lightsaber above him. I don't know. What's the lady's name in it?
Elaine.
Steve? Elaine.
Elaine. Yeah.
Who I absolutely love, Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Yes, from
One of my favourites. She's absolutely fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
As she was as Leia, sort of laying there at his feet. Amazing piece of art. Really cool.
Yeah, that's great.
Nice.
So while we're on the subject of the Blu-ray, saw something today. There was an article on a site, and the site's name has escaped me. But they were suggesting that we might get an iTunes version of The Force Awakens next month.
Okay. I can believe it, because there is precedent for Apple, for iTunes specifically, getting digital distribution slightly earlier than other platforms and slightly earlier than physical media. I think it was Game of Thrones, wasn't it? It had a fair few months on that.
Oh, there's a few things. There's a few things. I got The Martian the week before it was
released. There's a few high-profile examples. Like I say, Game of Thrones is the one that sticks in my head as the biggest gap. Because I think Series 5 has been on there for quite a while, and we're only getting that in 3 weeks on physical media.
Yeah.
So it's not unheard of for them to get a slight jump on the physical copies.
I put a piece up on the site today. I don't know if you had a chance to see it, Rob, or Steve. I know you've been busy, mate, but...
No.
Yeah, it was about the theatrical release window.
Mm.
And how... Oh, right, yeah. I don't know where this... Because there's a rumoured release date for the Blu-ray is early April.
Yep.
First week in April, which would put it at about the right time.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 15-week theatrical release window, so a film has got 15 weeks to do money in theatres before home entertainment takes over.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a thing, I kind of nod to it in the article I wrote today, but there was a thing a few years ago now, where Alice in Wonderland, Tim Burton's Alice in Wonderland was coming out.
Yeah,
and Disney tried to truncate the theatrical release window.
Yes,
for the purposes of
getting the DVDs out faster.
Getting the DVDs out, whilst people were still aware of the product.
Yes,
so that they didn't then have to spend a lot of money, mm-hmm. sort of reintroducing people to the concept.
Yeah,
and cinemas pulled the film from their release window.
Yeah, I believe it, because obviously there's a power play at work with that sort of thing. I mean, I've been made to understand that it's... I think I've talked about it before. I believe it's 3 to 6 months is the turnaround time to get it on physical media. But then, what with movies being digital now, it's got to be an easier process.
Oh, it's a very easy process. And you see in theatre piracy, camcording and things, I no longer see that as the big threat here. I see the fact that... there are DVD masters out there and everything's sitting somewhere on a server and people are pulling down these digital versions and getting them up online. They're pristine before they can even get them into the stores. It's really, the threat's now shifted from a theatre. I mean, you look at all the cam versions of The Force Awakens that are available right now. People are still going to theatres. They will get into box office in a minute and you'll see the number there is... astonishing, and so piracy really hasn't harmed that in any way, shape or form. And I'd often argue that the people that were going to watch it on a pirated copy wouldn't go to the theatre anyway. It's a bit like, you know...
I think there's some truth to that. I think it's, you know, there are going to be people in there who are just doing it for convenience and cost, but I think there are people who just don't want to pay for stuff.
Yeah.
In general, you know.
They wouldn't go. That wouldn't be part of that bottom line anyway.
Exactly. They'd be determined to find any way they could not to be.
But this is going to start to hit on home entertainment, I think. And unless they start to work on things like embracing new media like 4K and getting more quality special features out there.
Yeah.
And more added features as well, because there's plenty of opportunity now to say, we're going to send you an update to your digital.
Oh, wow, yeah. That,
with more. Absolutely. Blu-ray players came out and they started doing that.
Yeah, you could stream content at that.
Yeah.
And you could have firmware updates that would actually kind of improve the feature set of your player that would just be downloadable, which is one of the reasons when the PlayStation 3 first came out, it was one of the most it was the most popular Blu-ray player.
Yeah.
Because it was one of the few that you could buy that had firmware updates.
Yeah.
Because at the time, every Blu-ray player came out, and then if some update happened to the discs, it meant that certain machines were just not optimized for it anymore.
Yeah.
Whereas PS3 could get the updates to the Blu-ray firmware as well as the software updates for the hardware.
Which has become a bit of a standard now, isn't it, really?
Absolutely. I mean, for better or worse, a lot of things get, you know, a lot of console hardware and software decisions get determined by what happens before. For better or worse, because sometimes for me the changes aren't actually an improvement, they're a bit of a downgrade, but it depends. I mean, sometimes it results in better experiences, but not always the case.
Oh, I really like the idea of one day clicking play on my copy of The Force Awakens in iTunes and the Rogue One trailer just playing before it.
That'd be awesome.
And that sort of thing.
Yeah, almost like an enhanced kind of...
Just an enhanced experience where it just... Or it plays a little trailer saying, you'll now find this feature length documentary, or go to this site and download your like a podcast audio commentary, which we're going to do. Obviously, we're going to get together and do one for Force Awakens, aren't we? So people can sit and watch it with us.
Absolutely.
So I think what you said, Rob, there is precedence for digital media, the streaming services, getting the digital content now before the Blu-rays are released. So I think that would make sense that we might actually see this around mid-March landing on iTunes.
Right. Yeah. I'll be picking it up somewhere at some point. Maybe more than one format. I'm not sure yet.
Yeah, I might go. It depends what they do with the special features in iTunes. It might be a Blu-ray buy for me as well, just for that.
I think I like physical for something like that anyway, to be honest.
Still no news on a 4K version, Mark?
No, there's. I think The Martian has come out. The first 4K Blu-ray I saw is The Martian. That came out. I saw something. I popped it on Facebook.
Oh no, there are others.
Are there?
Yeah, last year, maybe last year or the year before, Muse put out a DVD, a CD and Blu-ray box set, and that Blu-ray was shot. I don't know if it was broadcast. It must have been, but it was shot in 4K. And actually, it looks absolutely stunning because they've got this huge video screen behind them that's constantly doing stuff, and it's just the animations and the sort of the CG work that they've put into the show is just nothing short of superb. And it just looks so crisp; it's wonderful. Even on a 1080, you know, it looks just wonderful.
I'm looking at there's a Ghostbusters 1 and 2 in 4K on Blu-ray.
Which came out.
The end of 2014.
In fact, I think I have the Terminator as a 4K reissue. I'm just looking at my shelf now.
There's loads of them. See, this is what I'm out of touch.
Sorry, mate.
Do you have a 4K player?
No,
so
no.
What
but
are
I
you doing then? Just playing it on 1080.
Yeah, just you know, it's one of those things I like to, where possible, if I can get it cheap enough, I'll future-proof.
Future-proof. Yeah,
I still mean. Yeah, makes sense.
Obviously, if there's a massive price difference, then, you know, if there's 20 quid between the two, then I'll go for the 1080 one at the moment. But
yeah, sure.
If it's
this
the same
is, this is kind of an after-show conversation, I suppose, but there's a 4K Blu-ray of Hancock for 30 quid on eBay. How about no thank you?
That's the most optimistic release I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, isn't it? Yeah.
I like Hancock, but not for 30 quid.
Not for 30 quid, no.
Exactly. And it's also not the kind of film where I go, you know what, I need to see that in 4K.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, I need to see every wrinkle on.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, I own Mrs. Doubtfire on Blu-ray, but that's because it's one of my favourite movies. It's not to make use of the format.
No. Right, let's talk about some box office. The Force Awakens is kind of dragging its carcass across some sort of line now.
Mm-hmm. I think it's winding down, for sure.
Very, very much so. I put the box office figures out every Monday, and I've sort of mapped out the weekend's takings, and it's levelling off now.
Yeah.
So, did we say that, wasn't there a little bet going that it would beat Avatar?
Yeah, the game's not over yet, Steve.
No, the box office, it won't reach 2.7, will it?
It could be re-released.
I think it's going to be re-released next year, in fact.
Like Avatar was.
I would be surprised.
Yeah, an extra 16 minutes.
Yeah, but that was also... Didn't they release it... Was it around the time the Oscars were?
Oh, no, it was 8 minutes. Yes, it was. And also, it was 8 minutes at first. The Blu-ray had 16. They're not silly, are they?
That's right, yeah. Oh, no, by no means, yeah.
You can watch on the Blu-ray I've got, you can watch the 8-minute version or the 16-minute version or the normal version.
Yeah, I've got that. And it's great. It doesn't really... You don't need it.
Oh, I think there are some really, really good scenes in it.
There's some interesting stuff in there.
Yeah.
You think you've seen 8 minutes.
Yeah. It saw Terminator. It's as good as that for me.
Mm.
Well, I don't think there'll be an extended version of The Force Awakens, but I do think it'll hit theatres again before episode 8.
I think so. I mean, they've done it with Lord of the Rings. They've done it with, you know, they've done it with Star Wars. I mean, we've seen sort of cinemas do merit. Like, there's, is it the Prince Charles Cinema in Leicester Square does marathons of things like that, where they do sort of, you know, a marathon. I remember once, the one I really wanted to go and see was RoboCop, The Raid and Dread as a marathon. I can't remember what order it was. It was to do an equation. I think it was RoboCop first, then The Raid, then Dread final last. Because it was sort of suggesting that Dread was a kind of mashup of the two.
Oh, the new RoboCop or the old one?
The original one, I think.
Yeah,
I mean, I saw the new one the other day, and it's not bad.
I don't dislike it. I think it's quite a good movie.
No. I like the fact they did something a bit different with it. That was nice.
Yeah.
They could have just done a straight remake.
It was, in the same vein as Dread. We all discussed this before, but we all like Dread.
Oh, I love Dread.
Yeah, it's great.
I can see that 3 times at the cinema.
Wow.
Yeah, I like that movie quite a bit. And that's one of those few movies that 3D really improves. For me, anyway. Because I don't really get the effect for the most part. Force Awakens at the IMAX was, you know, was superb with 3D. And Dread 3D was also excellent. But other than that, I've never really seen a huge jump up in quality for me.
That Force Awakens IMAX release was stunning. And that, I think, might be key to it earning the sort of money it needs to catch up with.
I think so.
At least Titanic. Because a re-release... will give people an opportunity to see it in other formats, see it in D-Box and see it in 3D if they haven't seen it in 3D.
Or 4D. They've got 4D ones now.
And IMAX.
Yeah, and
IMAX will be the real seller. And it's such a premium ticket as well. So
And IMAX, my experience of IMAX is limited to Spectre, which I saw at it wasn't a great IMAX, so it was quite a small screen in terms of size of the actual room.
Yeah.
But and I saw Force Awakens at the big IMAX in Leicester Square, and that was superb.
It's such just a gorgeous superb. Film, isn't it?
It is. Such it's a really, gorgeous it's film. Really nice. It's a really nice looking film.
I can't wait to have it on my TV and sit and pause it and
yeah,
yeah,
just take it, drink it in.
Yeah,
all the detail.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, Rob. You sent me a message today and said you wanted to talk about Star Wars Force Awakens Lego. Is that that's the game, right?
It is the game, yeah. I wanted to get your opinions on it, because for me, I'm kind of cautiously optimistic, and I'm thinking of writing a short piece about it for Talk Star Wars.
Oh, yeah.
About how I'm kind of cautiously optimistic of it, because on the one hand, the Lego games are of a pretty good standard. They're generally pretty fun, and there's a lot to, you know... there's a lot to enjoy about them, and they do a really nice job of sending up the films in a way that still drives the story forward. I mean, have you guys seen the trailer for it?
Yes, I really liked it, yeah.
Where they sort of sent up the original teaser, or sort of mixed the original teaser and the second teaser and the trailer and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
My hesitation comes from the fact that, historically, Lego games have always been the big boxed ones that come as a retail package, rather than this dimension stuff, have always been... at least 2 films, maybe 3 or 4.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, is it going to be quite short?
Now, this is the problem with modern games, isn't it?
Yeah.
That they're not the investment they used to be.
No, because, I mean, the original Lego Star Wars was episodes 1, 2 and 3.
Yeah.
And then they did Lego Star Wars episode 2.
I've got all of them.
4, 5 and 6. Mm-hmm. And then they did... Lego Star Wars Complete Saga, which was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and they've done Lego Star Wars 3, which is based on the Clone Wars, and Obviously, they've done Indiana Jones, which is three films, and then the sequel is one film, and then a recut of some other bits. And, you know, there's always been this theme of there's at least two films in the mix. I think the only one that hasn't followed that format is Jurassic World. So I don't know if that one's any good in terms of, is it, you know... Because if that one's good and has a decent amount of stuff, then I'm less bothered. I'm less kind of hesitant, because obviously Jurassic World is one film, and they've made a game out of that. And if they've managed to keep it sufficiently... What's the word? Sufficiently long-lasting in terms of stuff to do off the beaten path.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, and the Harry Potter ones were four films each, the two games.
I really enjoyed them. And
they were good, yeah.
I think there might be something to be said for sticking to the... If they had the bare-bone story of The Force Awakens...
Yep.
And then have a bunch of side games that takes you off, and then they're a little bit more substantial, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
So if you wanted to come off and do like a pod race type thing around the junkyards on Jakku, that might be an option for a side game that will
boost
the playability a little bit.
Yeah.
Give you an opportunity to step out of the narrative of The Force Awakens, but stay in the world.
Yeah, because I've had I had Lego City for the Wii U, and that was... One that wasn't even themed on a film or a TV series. It was kind of a send-up of all those classic 70s detective and TV cop shows. And it was really good. But there was I found there was an unwieldy large amount of stuff to do in it. It was overwhelming and actually put me off a bit. So maybe, you know, on the one hand, I say I'm apprehensive because it's one film and it might be a bit short. On the other hand, I don't want it to be too long because it'll just be, you know, daunting.
Yeah.
And it puts me off. It's like we were talking about No Man's Sky last episode, and how every time I read about how many planets there are and stuff, it's daunting because there's so much stuff that I won't be able to physically see in my lifetime, and that's not what I buy games for.
No, but then it's kind of a game. It's more for me. No Man's Sky isn't about an objective or a follow me icon. Yeah. It's about you're creating your own story.
Yeah.
Just living and relaxing, because it's all, don't forget, the whole game is very, there are, things will attack you, ships will attack you, you will be under threat, but it's a very relaxing game, and I think they want to be almost like something new and something that hasn't been done before that you won't mind playing for as long as you can.
Yeah,
you know,
so maybe...
And they're going to be doing updates to it, even they've alluded to the fact that even when the PS5 or whatever iteration of PS, Sony PlayStation comes out next, They'll be redoing all the graphics and stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
Which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's... I don't see it as the same kind of game as, like, take Lego Star Wars, because...
Sure.
It's not something that I personally will think, oh, cool, when's this going to end?
Yeah.
You don't have to get to the centre of the galaxy, which is supposed to be the objective to do, because I think when you get there, you're just going to have another galaxy open up in a black hole.
Maybe, yeah.
It's going to redo the algorithm that procedurally generates the whole universe again, and you can just play on.
Yeah.
So I kind of, yeah, Lego Star Wars, I played Lego Star Wars. It's very, very good. Again, not for me, because, again, I just don't like that whole, I'm a very sort of purist when it comes to Star Wars. It's films or nothing for me. I don't know why, apart from the books, which you kind of, you can insert your own characters into.
And Battlefront.
Reading them. But again, it's never really rocked my world.
Okay.
And having said that, I do play Battlefront every time. It's amazing. Yeah.
So I have a question off to kind of spin off from this, because I mentioned I'd ask you a question based on that conversation. What kind of game would hook you in for a Star Wars game?
It's the Battlefront, that type of thing.
Okay.
Yeah,
I would like a more campaign-driven version of Battlefront. I would be quite happy to buy a game that's just the Battle of Hoth and just play a campaign Battle of Hoth.
Okay, interesting. See, I was thinking the other day, what I'd really like is for the company Telltale, the one who do all the Game of Thrones,
Walking Dead,
to do a Star Wars story.
That would be fantastic, wouldn't it? That's a great idea.
I'd want it to be about Lando, but that's just me. You know, to kind of fill in the gaps between when he loses the Falcon and Empire.
Yeah.
Would be kind of cool. Something like that might be cool.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Yeah. Because they're doing a Batman game this year, I think.
Telltale.
Yeah, yeah, they announced it last year.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah,
I mean, the game versions of films are always, look at the Avatar one. I mean, it was just horrendous.
Yeah.
They always kind of play second fiddle to the film,
Sure.
It always seems like a tack on, and let's make some money off the back of the film.
It seems like that because that's what it is, Steve.
Yeah, this is it. No. Yeah. We were talking about this. I think me and Mark were talking about this on the episode you had to shoot off from when we interviewed Anna Maria. I was saying that when you're either a film director making a video game adaptation, or a video game designer making a film adaptation, you've got two choices. You can either do a completely separate story, which will alienate the hardcore fans if it's too much of a departure, or you can do a shot for shot and bore them. You can't really win. The only option you've got is to kind of tread that line that's just different enough, but not completely departure. There was a game that came out, I'm trying to think what it was. I think it was Transformers. Around the time a film came out, they released a completely separate game that had nothing to do with the film, and it did really well, and it was supposed to be really good. But they timed it to kind of take advantage of the excitement of the film, but it wasn't a film tie-in.
No.
So that seems to me to be a better approach. I'm amazed it's not caught on more often, because I know one or two that have done that. But
a bit of that synergy, or there's the prospect for some of that synergy now with the Lego Star Wars Force Awakens game, and the new Lego Star Wars TV show, which has just been announced.
Yeah, the Lego Star Wars things. Have you seen the sort of short movies they've done? The Lego Star Wars ones.
Have I seen any of them? No, I don't think I have.
No, I haven't.
They're quite. Steve, they might not appeal to you because they're not. They're kind of skewed at the younger age, but they are. There's a lot of funny stuff to like about them. There's a particular one. I can't remember what it's called. There's two of them that spring to mind. I think it's called The Empire Strikes Out or something like that.
Right.
And they bring Darth Maul back. And as it's opening the doors, it's playing Duel of the Fates, and it's just him singing the word awesome about himself.
But these aren't tongue-in-cheek generally, are they?
Oh, very much so, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, see, they wouldn't do anything for me.
No, they're very much... I mean, they tell separate stories, so they're not kind of, not like the Lego Star Wars games where they're trying to sort of retell the story events of the films with a Lego spin. It's a completely separate story within the universe.
And that's what we're going to get from this Star Wars Freemaker Adventures, isn't it? We're going to be getting a new story being told. It's within canon, but it's not going to be a slave to the Skywalker story.
So what's the... Have they kind of talked at all about what the premise is?
No, I think they're a family. I think the Freemakers are a family.
Oh, okay.
Within there. And they're going to be moving around... I think it's between Empire and Jedi. They're going to be moving around the Star Wars galaxy at that point in time. Sort of building ships and selling them on or something, I think.
Yeah.
They might cross paths with the Empire and all that sort of stuff. But apart from that, I don't really know a great deal about it. I know that I'm probably going to... I'll see some of it. And I'm probably going to move away from it pretty quickly. Because, like Steve, I prefer to... expose myself to stuff that's going to drive the saga forward and not waste a lot of time on
expanded universe.
Yeah, on the folly of it.
If none of these things tie in perfectly, I always think, well, where am I? Why come that doesn't fit that? And it makes it too disparate for me.
Yeah, no, you're right. I'm with you there completely.
Fair enough.
And there is a storytelling style in Star Wars that it's very difficult for me to put my finger on what it is, but there's not a lot of minutiae in there in Star Wars. It's all pretty much broad strokes at high speed.
Yeah.
So we don't know where they buy their clothing or how they eat their dinner or where they go to the toilet. And, you don't see these things. You don't need to because what they've done is they've stripped all of that stuff away from the core story and they focus on the core story. But it's when like you get into TV shows, they've got more time to waste on that stuff.
Yeah, it's like the conversation in Clerks about the Death Star... the second Death Star being full of people like roofers and plumbers when it was blown up.
Yeah.
You don't have to think about that stuff when you're, just watching the film. You don't think about that until afterwards.
There's no time to do it. There's no time to waste on it.
On that subject, did you see Kevin Smith's grudging acceptance of a tweet that had an answer to his question in it from episode 7.
No, I didn't see that one.
So this was just after about a couple of weeks after the movie came out, when it was kind of a little bit more safe to talk about plot points. Kevin Smith begrudgingly accepted that because Finn had said that he'd worked in sanitation, that he guessed there were people working on toilets on the Death Star, so he had to accept that, you know, even though in Clerks it had kind of been suggested that no stormtrooper would be willing to do it, then obviously they were.
Yeah.
He was like, you know, I'll give you that, JJ, you got me there.
Yeah, it was definitely done as a nod, that, wasn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
Right, we've got a couple of bits left on the show notes to talk about. We've got Rob, we've already done your listener question, really, haven't we?
There were two.
Can we stick a pin in the other one and pick it up next week?
Sure, yeah.
It's
probably best to pick it up when we find out, because it's about Snoke, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's kind of best to pick it up when we maybe know a bit more about him.
Okay, let's do that then. So the last two bits in, we've got Mads Mikkelsen. After we spoke about him last week, possibly playing an Oppenheimer-like character.
Yeah.
Who may or may not be the father to Felicity Jones's character, who may or may not be named Jin.
Yep.
God, we don't know anything about this film yet, do we?
lot of speculation we do here.
He's come out and said, this is quite an old interview as well that's resurfaced. It was before the film, or at least before he started shooting on the film. He came out and said, I'm not a villain in it.
Oh, he was specific about the film, was he?
He was specific about it being Rogue One.
He didn't just say, I'm not a villain in general. We know that, Mads. It's fine. We've accepted that you're not a complete, you know.
Just mainly your on-screen persona.
Yeah, you just play a very good one on TV.
Yeah, he excels at it.
Yeah, very much so.
He's saying his character in Rogue One is not the villain.
Yeah, he's not the villain, but he still could be a villain or a reformed villain.
That's an interesting way to look at it.
Mm.
Yeah. You should be a lawyer, Rob.
I know, right? Or a detective, like I say.
I put something out about it where I suggested that Star Wars has previous for this as well, that the villain doesn't see himself as the villain.
No. Sure.
The villain's the hero in his own story, right?
Yeah. And plus we've had reformed villains before, and people like, you know, maybe not so much of a villain, but Lando, again, coming back to him.
In Han Solo.
He betrayed one of his oldest friends and then reformed.
Yeah, and even Han Solo himself is a cold-blooded killer in that canteen.
Yeah, he starts off as a mercenary, you know.
Well, if you believe that rubbish that he shot first.
I believe it. I saw it. I was there in the 70s. I saw it.
Yeah. I wore out my VHS copies looking for this.
Yeah. So there you go. Mads Mikkelsen, not a villain. Or is he? And the final bit on the news is quite an interesting thing about Space Bear, which should be this evening's episode's name. Episode 8, a.k.a. Space Bear, is to shoot in Croatia in Dubrovnik between the 12th and the 16th of March, which may be over the release date of the iTunes version of The Force Awakens.
Mm.
Yes, awesome.
Shooting overnight. Have you seen a picture of Dubrovnik?
I haven't. I'm going to look it up now.
Well, it is very, very beautiful.
Yes.
And B, it looks an awful lot like Theed from episode 1.
Ooh, interesting.
It is staggeringly similar, in fact.
What's that, Mark? Remind me.
Theed is where is on Naboo, where the where Padme was the queen. You've got that beautiful sort of that romantic era architecture. It looked a lot like parts of Italy.
Yes, it looked like one of the Italian lakes.
Yeah, like Como, like Como.
Okay, and I'm gonna postulate a theory.
Go on, mate.
And this is purely, again, this, you know, it seems to be what I do so far, is just speculate wildly.
That's good.
I am gonna theorize if this is gonna work on the assumption that our previous theory is not the case, and actually that it's just a simpler Rey as a Skywalker. Which would mean that Padme of Theed is her grandmother.
Yeah.
Which would be a perfectly good reason to visit, I would think.
Oh, that's such a good idea.
Yeah. It's also, am I right in thinking that Dubrovnik is King's Landing?
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it looks like it. Things to do in Dubrovnik. And one of the things it says is cut Ned Stark's head off, but no. King's Landing in Dubrovnik. Yeah, so they've basically CG'd over the top of Dubrovnik, but it's actually King's Landing from Game of Thrones.
Oh, that's interesting.
Or part of it, anyway, by the looks of it. Because it's three different Croatian towns and or cities make up King's Landing, because obviously it's a huge place.
I really like your idea that they might have to go back to Theed, or at least
just, you know,
somewhere on Naboo that's very similar.
There's some familial tie, maybe. You know, again, it's just, you know, it's all speculative, but you never know.
There is something in a book, or is it the comic book, or is it an upcoming book by the author of, it's called Bloodlines. It's called Star Wars Bloodlines.
Oh, I know the one.
It's about Princess Leia.
Yes.
And she goes to Theed.
Yes.
And she goes into the castle, into the palace.
Yes.
And she senses Darth Maul.
Okay.
That's part of the story of Bloodlines. I'm pretty sure that book's not out yet.
I was going to ask if it was canon or not, but if it's not out, it'll be new canon.
It is new canon.
Yeah. Okay,
I think it's a prequel to The Force Awakens. I think it's part of the journey to The Force Awakens storyline.
Okay, interesting.
I'm pretty sure she goes to Theed. She goes into the castle and she picks up the fact that Darth Maul's there.
Yeah.
So I wonder whether or not this could play into Episode 8, whether there's
maybe
some other form of investment in Naboo.
Yeah, I mean, it's entirely possible as well that it's not related to Rey. It might be related to Luke.
Yeah.
Or you might see Leia go there.
Well, I did speculate early on that perhaps Leia had taken the throne of Naboo.
Ooh.
Because Alderaan haven't been gone. But clearly, none of that is accurate now, because she's no longer royalty, she's general, and she's not.
Yeah, she hates when you call her that.
Yeah.
You read the book.
And she's pretty much out there in the wastelands of the galaxy now, isn't she, hiding out on these little beaten up planets?
Yeah, there is that.
So there you go, we're proving that Talk Star Wars are as wild and reckless with their theories as Stormtroopers are with their blasters. But like the Stormtroopers, occasionally we hit our target.
Eventually, if we shoot enough, we'll hit something.
Right, that'll do us for this week then, gents. Should we wrap this up?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, where can everybody find you this week, guys?
I'm in bed with a bad back. You can find me there and bring me food and drinks.
Okay, we'll do that.
You can look on Calistine on YouTube.
Oh, yeah, there'll be a link to Steve's YouTube channel in the notes below. Rob?
So there'll be a new episode of my podcast, The Crazy Train, dropping on the Friday before this goes up. That's on emotionally14.com. So that's YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, all emotionally14. Digits 14, not letters. So you can find me there as the host of that show. And that's about it, really. I mean, obviously, like I say, otherwise I'll be frantically scouring the streets of Rochester looking for boxes.
Not to live in, to move with.
I'm moving. We get the keys on Friday, so it's going to be, you know, next week. Hopefully this time next week I'll be in the process of moving stuff, and then obviously whenever I can get an internet connection, I'll be back up and running.
And wrong end of the stick, Rob. I thought you were doing a charity thing where you would sleep rough in a cardboard box, which
no.
does every year.
Unless something goes horribly, horribly wrong with the move, then no, that's not happening.
Right, you can find everything we do as a collective at talkstarwars.co.uk, and I'm on Twitter at talkstarwars. Check out our YouTube channel as well, as there's a subscription link down below. Also, you may very much be interested in a new little bonus podcast that may or may not come out after this one, called TSW After Dark Side. It's where we talk about random stuff for as long as we want and then throw that out there. I'm going to try and get that out. You'll get this on Monday. It'll be up on Thursday.
All right.
And we'll see how long that lasts. I think that's a pretty cool idea.
I think so. I mean, obviously, I built a podcast around the concept, so I'm you know, biased, but...
Well, there you go. Nice one. All right, guys. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch up with you all next week.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers, guys. Thanks very much.